and the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loright. Coming up, a big shakeup in the Trump administration. Rex Tillerson is out as Secretary of State. That means the current CIA director moves over to head the State Department. What does it all mean for war and torture as instruments of U.S. foreign policy? We're going to talk about that in a moment. First, one listener comment about the segment we played on Monday. We played 2 minutes of President Trump's speech in Pennsylvania over the weekend as he was campaigning for one of the congressional candidates who ran in the race yesterday. Here's what one listener had to say.
This is Scott Eller, and I heard your show on March 12th regarding Donald Trump and the language and comments he makes towards the media. And while I agree the language is a little strong, and the last caller you had talked about that the children hear it, well, the children also see the media out and out lying about what the president is doing, and nobody is telling the children about that and admonishing the media for falsely representing what the president is doing. So I think if the media would be more respectful and truthful about what's actually going on, I also would hope that Mr. Trump would be more respectful in the language that he uses to describe them. But I think we need to give credit where credit is due and look at the good work that he's done and successes he's had and not ignore them.
Well, there's a listener comment that came in after Monday's show. We're going to open up the phone lines later on in this program. But first, President Trump has fired Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. He did it yesterday via Twitter. He picked CIA Director Mike Pompeo to shift from being America's spy chief to being its top diplomat. Trump is also naming Deputy CIA Director Gina Haspel as the new head of the spy agency. Here to talk about what this means for the possibility of war and the use of torture by the U.S. is Melvin Goodman, who was an analyst at the CIA for 24 years. He's now a professor. His books include Whistleblower at the CIA, an insider's account of the politics of intelligence and national insecurity, the cost of American militarism. And Mel Goodman joins us on the phone. Mel, welcome back to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Rob. It's good to be with you.
So what do you think of the changes at the State Department and the CIA?
Well, these are very unsatisfactory changes that could make a bad situation much worse. When you look at someone like Mike Pompeo, remember, as a congressman, he is someone who supported the idea of torture and abuse. He believes that torture and abuse is effective, and there's no one who's worked in that field in a serious way who believes that. So this is an attitude he had at the CIA, and now this is an attitude he's taking to the State Department. He'll be replaced by his deputy, Gina Haspel, who was actually a practitioner of torture and abuse. She was a cheerleader for torture and abuse as a CIA operational official. She went way beyond what the Justice Department even approved in terms of torture and abuse. She ran a secret prison in Thailand, where they conducted waterboarding. One individual was waterboarded about 83 times, which shows you that waterboarding obviously isn't very effective. And then when she was there, Nasri, who was involved in the USS Cole attack, was waterboarded at least 3 times. Then the other problem that she creates, in addition to being a practitioner in the field of torture and abuse, is she helped to draft the cable that went out to the various secret prisons telling them to destroy the torture tapes. Now, this is extremely important because the CIA took videos of themselves. These were very extremely sadistic videos. There was a court order to protect these videos because there were lawsuits, including one by the American Civil Liberties Union, to get their hands on the torture tapes. But her boss, Jose Rodriguez, who was the director of operations at the time, obviously believed that seeing these torture tapes would be much more risky for the CIA than destroying them. Of course, he was right, because there were no consequences, no accountability. But when the cable went out, it was a cable that was drafted and sent by Gina Haspel. I think what people don't realize is that when you take someone who's been a cheerleader for torture and abuse and then make them director of the CIA, this is reminiscent of the cynicism that was created at the CIA when I was there in the 1980s, and Robert Gates was the deputy director of the CIA, the deputy to Bill Casey. Casey and Gates were responsible for the politicization of intelligence throughout the 1980s. And then in 1991, Gates was named by George H.W. Bush to be the CIA director. So here's the person who politicized intelligence who came back as the director of Central Intelligence. And he created great cynicism throughout the Directorate of Intelligence. And I would argue that giving Gina Haspel this very important position will create the same kind of cynicism, that there's no point in fighting the good fight, in honoring the Constitution. Remember, there is an amendment, the Eighth Amendment, against torture and abuse. So it sends the wrong signal. Now, in Pompeo, sending Pompeo to the State Department is bad on several levels. One, obviously, Tillerson was not a very effective Secretary of State. He didn't really staff up the department. That's a mistake that probably Pompeo will correct, but we'll see who he staffs it up with. He didn't have a good relationship with the President of the United States, who he referred to as an effing moron in a meeting at the Pentagon, and I think his days were numbered ever since he made that statement. But he was considered one of the more moderate influences on Donald Trump. And Donald Trump obviously needs some moderation. So Tillerson was opposed to naming Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, which was a provocative move that I think undercut any chance for a peace process in the Middle East, which Trump says he's still devoted to. Tillerson was in favor of dialogue with North Korea, but every time he mentioned it, he was shut down by the president of the United States. I think, as I said, his days were numbered. Pompeo is a Tea Party congressman from Kansas. He's a hardliner. He's a neoconservative. He believes in the use of military force. I don't see him as a diplomat. I don't see him as someone who understands the geopolitical arena in a way that will advance the positions of the United States. And if you look at just one area, the Iran Comprehensive Plan of Action, the Iranian Nuclear Accord, he's opposed to that accord. He was opposed to it as a congressman. He was opposed to it as a CIA director, despite the good work that the CIA did in terms of verifying and monitoring the agreement. And obviously, he's going to feed Trump's interest in decertifying that agreement in May, which is coming up in just 2 months. The irony here is, at the very time we're seeking a nuclear agreement with North Korea, the United States could very well undercut, compromise one of the most important nuclear agreements we've ever signed, which was the international agreement regarding Iran. So I see the Pompeo appointment as bad on several levels, and I would say the same thing for Gina Haspel at CIA.
All right. I want to unpack some of that. We're talking with Mel Goodman, who spent 24 years at the CIA. He's written several books, including Whistleblower at the CIA, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Mel, let's start with Haspel and her record of torture. It's been pretty widely reported, so I don't think that's in dispute. Is it illegal? You talked about the Constitution. Is it illegal to torture? Is it illegal for an official of the U.S. government to torture? And is it illegal to destroy evidence, to destroy tapes that would prove torture?
Well, on both levels, I think there's illegality. There are domestic laws and international laws and the Constitution itself against torture and abuse. All of these laws and the Constitution itself were violated. The irony here is that the two lawyers who drafted the so-called torture memos, one was John Yoo, the other Jay Bybee, they were rewarded in a sense. Jay Bybee became a federal judge. John Yoo is on the faculty of the University of California Law School in Berkeley. But the important thing is Gina Haspel and others, people like Jose Rodriguez, John Brennan, who became a CIA director eventually, who also supported torture and abuse, they supported measures that went beyond what the Department of Justice called for. So there's no question there's illegality. As for the tapes and the destruction of the tapes, as I mentioned, that was a clear case to me of obstruction of justice because there was a federal court action by various groups, including the ACLU. The president himself in this case made the statement to the CIA that the torture tape should be protected. A federal judge called for protection of the torture tapes. And then when this issue was investigated by a CIA group, not by the Inspector General, but by another group appointed by Leon Panetta, who was a very ineffective CIA director, they said there was no responsibility or accountability that was involved for people such as Jose Rodriguez, who was then allowed to write a book that the CIA approved that denied torture and abuse ever took place. So this is the kind of dysfunctional system that creates real cynicism, not only in the agencies that employ people who were then led by people like Tenet and Rodriguez and Haspel and John McLaughlin, all people who falsified intelligence, in some cases to go to war, such as Iraq, or in some cases to discuss torture and abuse. And I think this is the kind of system that needs to be corrected, but I can't see it happening in the Trump administration.
You were in the CIA. What are CIA agents and analysts told about torture? What do they tell you when you go into the CIA?
Well, I think in terms of the training that I got, and I wasn't in the comprehensive training program because I went in as someone who had studied the Soviet Union, and I became a Soviet analyst, and I took some basic introductory courses. Not a lot of time is spent with torture and abuse because there were a couple hours devoted to the Constitution of the United States. And the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States clearly outlaws torture and abuse. And when you take your oath of office at a place like the CIA, and it's an oath I took at the Department of State, the United States Army, the Department of Defense, all the oaths are the same. They're to the Constitution of the United States, not to a president, not to a political party, not to the White House, but to the Constitution. So not a lot needed to be said. Now, in the wake of politicization, when I testified against Robert Gates in 1991 and exposed his role in politicizing intelligence, there was a lot of work done at the Office of Training at CIA to allow people who were coming into the CIA to have an understanding of what politicization is all about and why politicization is a definite violation of the moral compass of the CIA. You know, when you go into the CIA building, the motto on the floor is "the truth will make you free." It's the biblical injunction about truth and freedom. And it's important to keep this in mind. And if you don't have people who are willing to work toward truth and freedom, people who are willing to tell truth to power, I think the system breaks down. And when you look at the people Trump is appointing now, people like Pompeo, it's done on the basis of loyalty. Loyalty not to the Constitution, not to the country, but loyalty to Donald Trump. So I can't imagine Mike Pompeo willing to tell truth to power. And frankly, I don't think Gina Haspel is strong enough. She's a CIA lifer, a CIA bureaucrat who has made compromises along the way, including the compromise of the moral compass against torture and abuse. And I don't see her as a strong-willed CIA director. So these are serious setbacks.
One more question about Haspel. If she's being named as the new CIA director by President Trump, the European Center for Constitutional and Human Rights has asked German prosecutors to issue a warrant for her arrest over her role in the torture and interrogations. What does that do to her position? Does that create a problem? Talk about that for a moment.
Well, the problem she could have is the problem of travel. I think there are several foreign countries who have identified her role in torture and abuse during the war on terror in the wake of 9/11. It'd be kind of ironic if the CIA director went abroad and then faced a legal challenge. Germany has followed our own debate over privacy and security very closely because of their own experiences from the Nazi period. And remember, it was Donald Trump who compared CIA, this is rather ironic, to the Nazis in the 1930s before he was even inaugurated, after he was elected president of the United States. So Gina Haspel could have the same problem that Henry Kissinger could face or Dick Cheney could face. You know, in a lot of parts of Europe, there are individuals that have served in the United States government that are looked at as war criminals. Given Gina Haspel's work in torture and abuse, she could be viewed as a war criminal. She could confront the jurisprudence or legal investigations of another society, of a European society.
Well, we're talking about the shakeup in the State Department and the incoming director of the CIA as a result of the firing yesterday of Rex Tillerson by President Trump. Our guest is Melvin Goodman, who was for 25 years an analyst for the CIA. He's authored several books about his experience, including Whistleblower at the CIA, an insider's account of the politics of intelligence. Mel, going over to Pompeo as the new Secretary of State, over the last few weeks, we've had people like Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson on these airwaves who says that the likelihood of a U.S. war with Iran is increasing. He had a variety of reasons for saying that, but one of those is that President Trump has indicated that he wants to do away with the nuclear agreement with Iran. And I wonder, President Trump said that yesterday, that led to his decision to fire Tillerson. What is your opinion about whether or not the firing in Tillerson leads to the likelihood of war with Iran?
Well, one thing that the firing of Tillerson does is makes it more likely that we're going to decertify the Iranian nuclear accord. And maybe the wish is father to the thought in my case. I don't see war in the short term. But I guess what I worry about in the long term is why in the world would you challenge this nuclear accord, which is a very important international agreement, unless you were thinking about using military action? Tillerson is someone who believed in the Iranian nuclear accord, who did not want to pursue a military option against Iran, and was in favor of diplomacy, not only toward Iran, but toward North Korea. Mike Pompeo is just the opposite. He's very bombastic. I find his rhetoric very bellicose. He does believe in military option. He does believe in coercion. He's opposed to the Iranian nuclear accord. He's remained opposed to it, even as a CIA director, when it was the CIA who was thanked by the Secretary of State for their great work in supplying the verification measures and monitoring measures for the Iranian nuclear accord. So if you're going to do some analytical analysis of where we are right now, yes, I think we're closer to the possibility of coercion and maybe a military option for dealing with the Iran problem, which would be a huge blunder. The irony of all of this is we're trying to coax Kim Jong-un in North Korea, probably the most difficult head of state we have in the international community, coax him toward a table with negotiations as a result, and hopefully to get him to limit or even denuclearize his program. Are you really going to consider that in the month of May, the same month you're going to decertify a very important international agreement? I think that would tell the North Korean national security community, along with Kim Jong-un, that how in the world can you trust anything that comes from the United States when you have a president who's just torn up a very important agreement that has international support, not only from our European allies, but from Russia and China as well. So I think this is a very dangerous juncture, and it removes a moderate voice. I don't think Tillerson was an effective voice, but he was a moderating voice, and he worked very closely with Secretary of Defense Mattis to try to calm down the dangerous instincts of this president who is entirely unpredictable.
The Prime Minister of Israel was in Washington, D.C. last week visiting with President Trump. Do you see any relationship between the firing of Tillerson and Netanyahu's visit to Washington?
Well, unfortunately, Netanyahu has a great deal of influence over Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump would like to see himself as the kind of bellicose figure, authoritarian figure that Netanyahu is. Netanyahu, of course, has been a huge critic of the Iranian nuclear accord. He was even allowed to address a joint session of Congress to deliver an indictment against the nuclear accord, which I thought was an outrageous case of interference in the American political process. I'm sure that Netanyahu has had nothing but critical statements to say about Tillerson, who supports the Iran nuclear accord and was opposed to recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. So I don't know if whatever Netanyahu had to say was decisive, but they do have a close relationship. Netanyahu is not only close to Trump, but he's close to Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and I think Netanyahu would be overjoyed at the thought that Tillerson is now gone and Mike Pompeo is Secretary of State.
One last question, that is that it's lining up Iran on one side, Saudi Arabia on the other side with the United Arab Emirates and some other Gulf Coast countries, Qatar lining up with Iran. Are we on the verge of some sort of outbreak of war in the Middle East, do you think?
Well, the Middle East is becoming an apocalyptic scenario. There's no doubt about that. And one of the mistakes that we have made is not been a check on the use of power and military force by Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has taken some actions recently, particularly in Yemen, that have really set back any chance for stability in the region. What we have done instead is to demonize Iran. And I think we've gone too far in terms of demonizing Iran. Iran is a problem for the interests of the United States. But Iran has gained influence in the region because of the military actions of the United States by maintaining a position of power in Afghanistan and keeping the Taliban out of power in Afghanistan. We've done a big favor to Iran. And by overthrowing Saddam Hussein, we've done an even bigger favor to Iran. That's why Iran is now the major source of influence in Iraq, because you have a Shiite government in Iraq that's very friendly toward the Shia government in Iran. So instead of looking for ways to conduct diplomacy with Iran, we've demonized Iran to a tremendous extent, not acknowledging our own problem in creating instability in the region. The greatest action of instability in the region has not been anything that Iran has done in the Middle East. It's George Bush's invasion of Iraq in 2003 on the basis of false intelligence, which I'm sure Larry Wilkerson has also talked about, with regard to weapons of mass destruction that were not present at all in Iraq. So we have created a lot of this instability, and now essentially Trump, it's not that he's walked away from the Middle East, he really has no policy in the Middle East whatsoever. So when you look at situations in Syria, in Yemen, in Lebanon, throughout the region, there's total chaos, and the United States is not a factor, and countries such as Russia, Turkey, and Iran now have greater influence.
Mel, I know you've got to go and teach a class, but is there anything else that you'd like to point out about the firing of Tillerson and Haspel's appointment as prospectively the new CIA director?
Well, I think the point that needs to be made is what both these people need, Pompeo and Haspel, are rigorous confirmation hearings. Which I don't expect. I expect the Republicans will totally support both of these appointments, even though it's interesting that Senator McCain, as sick as he is, has sent a note to Washington asking for a rigorous examination of Haspel's credentials. I think McCain knows better than anyone else in America that torture and abuse just doesn't work, and I think he would like to see someone other than Haspel as director of CIA. But the important thing now is to have rigorous confirmation, to really get into the positions of Haspel on torture and abuse. Has she learned anything from her own support for torture and abuse? And to what degree is Pompeo reliable as a Secretary of State? I don't find him to be diplomatic in any way. He was coarse as a congressman. He was coarse in the Benghazi hearings. He's called for capital punishment for Edward Snowden. He's in favor of tearing up the Iran nuclear accord. I think all of these things have to be examined. And my problem with Republicans is they tend to ignore all these issues because they don't want to embarrass their president, and Democrats are not courageous enough in putting up a serious fight. I hope that Dianne Feinstein, who the senator from California, who kept Haspel from being the deputy director for operations at one time, renews her basis of argument with Haspel and lead some kind of general interrogation of her qualifications, because I don't think Haspel is qualified as the CIA director.
Mel Goodman, thank you for coming on WMNF. Great to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be with you again, Rob.
Okay, we'll have you back soon when we talk about foreign policy. This is the 15th anniversary this week of the invasion of Iraq, I believe.
It is the 15th anniversary, and I've got an op-ed in Counterpunch this week warning people that we falsified intelligence to go to war against Iraq 15 years ago, and the CIA played a huge role in that. And I worry now, to what degree could intelligence be compromised in order to justify military action against either North Korea or Iran. So these are times that should be taken very seriously.
Mel Goodman, thanks a lot, and people should look for that op-ed on the Counterpunch website. Thanks, Mel.
Thank you, Rob. Good to be with you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. That's Mel Goodman, who is a 24-year veteran of the CIA. He's written two books, National Insecurity, The Cost of American Militarism, and Whistleblower at the CIA, an Insider's Account of the Politics of Intelligence. We're going to listen to what President Trump said yesterday. Just a brief comment. This is what he said when he was asked, why did he fire Rex Tillerson?
I wish Rex Tillerson well. Gina, by the way, who I know very well, who I've worked very closely, will be the first woman director of the CIA. She is an outstanding person who also I have gotten to know very well. So I've gotten to know a lot of people very well over the last year. And I'm really at a point where we're getting very close to having the cabinet and other things that I want. But I think Mike Pompeo will be a truly great Secretary of State. I have total confidence in him. And as far as Rex Tillerson is concerned, I very much appreciate his commitment and his service, and I wish him well. He's a good man.
Mr. President, what did you tell Rex Tillerson? What did you say to Rex Tillerson?
Rex and I have been talking about this for a long time. We got along actually quite well, but we disagreed on things. When you look at the Iran deal, I think it's terrible. I guess he felt it was okay. I wanted to either break it or do something, and he felt a little bit differently. So we were not really thinking the same. With Mike Pompeo, we have a very similar thought process. I think it's going to go very well.
President Trump yesterday really admitting that the Iran nuclear deal was at the core of his difference with Rex Tillerson, and going to the point that our guest was making, Mel Goodman was making. Well, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And you can send an email into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. And we can talk about this. There's a lot of stories out there, including the congressional election yesterday in Southwest Pennsylvania, where it appears, at least right now, the Democrat is going to win over the Republican, a place where Donald Trump won in 2016 by about 22 points over Hillary Clinton. And President Trump was there a couple of times campaigning on behalf of the Republican, but apparently that did not help much, certainly not a 20-point victory by a Republican yesterday. There are still some votes to be counted, but right now the Democrat is ahead by about 600 votes. So we could talk about that. Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. I just want to read this story. Several outlets reported it yesterday. Headline, and I'll just read one of the headlines: the parents of Seth Rich are suing Fox News over murder conspiracy. And just reading from the ABC News website, the family of Democratic National Committee staffer Seth Rich, who was killed in 2016, has filed a lawsuit against Fox News. An investigative reporter and one of the network's frequent guests over a story about Seth Rich and allegations that he was involved in a conspiracy, according to the lawsuit. Seth Rich was shot and killed in Washington, D.C. in July 2016. Police said he was shot several times in the back, later died at a local hospital. Rich was 27 years old and worked as a voter expansion data director for the Democratic National Committee at the time. The May 16, 2017 Fox News article, which allegedly contained false and fabricated facts, according to the parents' lawsuit, fueled conspiracy theories that Rich was murdered in connection with a massive WikiLeaks data dump of 20,000 DNC emails days after his death. In the lawsuit, Rich's parents, Joel and Mary Rich, claim that Fox News investigative reporter Malia Zimmerman and Fox News commentator Ed Bukowski reached out to the family under false pretenses to support stories that Seth Rich leaked DNC emails to WikiLeaks. The lawsuit claims that Fox News and its on-air personalities, Zimmerman and Butowski, are liable for the harm caused by the report because they aided and abetted the intentional infliction of emotional distress caused by the story about Seth Rich, and alleges that Fox News provided with a national platform to develop what the lawsuit dubs a sham story. The Rich family claims that the Fox News defendant's conduct was extreme and outrageous, and what they allege was a deliberate effort to portray Seth Rich as a criminal and a traitor to the U.S. for sending emails, all these DNC emails, to WikiLeaks. The parent said in a joint statement, "No parent should ever have to live through what we have been forced to endure, the pain and anguish that comes from seeing your murdered son's life and legacy treated as a mere political football is beyond comprehension." So yesterday, the parents of Seth Rich sued Fox News over peddling a murder conspiracy theory about their son, Seth Rich, and they are angry, at least according to this story that I'm reading from the ABC News website. Well, today, thousands of students are walking out of their schools. High school students are walking out of their schools. Just looking at cable TV before I came on, you see massive demonstrations around the country as tens of thousands of people apparently are taking part in these demonstrations against gun violence. Walkouts are taking place in perhaps 3,000 locations, including one is going to take place this afternoon. It's actually after school hours, but it's going to take place in Ybor City at 4 o'clock this afternoon. And the other day I spoke with four students who are involved in the walkout. Let's listen to what they had to say. These are four students who are here on WMNF on Monday.
This Wednesday, the 14th, we have a march against gun violence at 4 p.m. in Centennial Park in downtown Ybor. So we had a previous march that was very successful on February, Friday the 23rd, and we have another one coming up on the 24th that we are not organizing but are attending, and then there is the 20th, which is Columbine's anniversary.
What a horrible anniversary that is,
yeah,
too. Yeah. About 20 years ago. So, Aiden Bennett, I want to ask you, when you heard about the Parkland shooting, what did you think?
Well, at first, you know, I thought, how come we allowed there to be another shooting? I was kind of thinking, oh, come on. We need to do something to prevent shootings from happening. And then, you know, it's terrible. These are kids. These are the future of our country, and we're just allowing them to be, you know, gunned down in places they're supposed to be safe.
Do you think something like Parkland could happen here in Tampa?
You know, it's very possible. I mean, you really don't think about it. We used to not think about, oh, this could happen to us, but with all of the shootings that are happening, it's very possible it could happen anywhere if we don't do something.
Alex, let me ask you, how do you think adults have done in this? I mean, because, you know, we're about reaching the anniversary of Columbine, so adults have been seeing this go on for years and years. Dozens of these mass shootings have gone on. How do you think we as adults have done?
Yeah, the adults have definitely failed us. They have failed this country. They have failed to introduce proper legislation. They have failed to create reform and initiate change. So the responsibility has now fallen upon us, the students. We have to take action. We have to initiate this change.
Alex, do you want a total ban on guns?
Not a total ban on guns. Handguns and certain rifles should be allowed, but however, weapons of war, automatic rifles, they should not be given to civilians. It's just unnecessary.
And Julie's last week when the state legislature ended its session, it decided not to ban these semi-automatic weapons that Alex was talking about. What did you think about what the legislature did the other day?
Honestly, it was kind of disgusting to not even give it a second glance, just to say that, no, we're not going to put a ban on something that's been destroying societies and generations and peoples for decades and decades. It's like having this disease that you have the cure for, but not wanting to cure the disease. Mm-hmm. It's inhuman.
Well, that was a outtake from an interview I did on Monday here on WMNF with four public high school students from Tampa who are taking part in this afternoon's walkout. Aiden Bennett and Alex Barrow go to Hillsborough High, and Julius Diaz and Sophia Amir attend Blake High School in Tampa. Well, we can talk about guns. We can talk about the student walkout. We can talk about Seth Rich, a possible war with Iran, the shakeup in the Trump administration, the outcome of the Pennsylvania election, and whatever else is on your mind. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And email address is dj@wmnf.org. Dave's in Tampa. Hey, Dave, you're on MNF. What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, hey, Rob. That was an interesting interview with Melvin Goodman. I was hoping to get a chance to ask him this as a question.
Yeah, he had to go teach a class. We didn't have much time with him, but sorry about that.
Well, the idea I was hoping to run by him is public hearings with respect to collusion, the Trump administration, the Trump campaign's collusion, accused collusion with Russians and issues surrounding that. All of this has been behind closed doors. The hearings have been behind closed doors. We've got these absurd memos coming from each side where they're interpreting intelligence. And, you know, obviously there's a need to protect methods and sources, but penchant for secrecy seems to be excessive. And I wanted to see whether he had thoughts on how you might open this entire process up, bring some sunshine to it so there's less of this one side accusing the other of lying, you know, based on basically no confirmed knowledge in the public forum.
Yeah, I think you're right, because everybody points to Watergate. We had those long hearings that summer. I remember popping in and out of the hearings, watching them on TV, on PBS that summer. So the public had a pretty good understanding of what was going on during Watergate, especially when John Dean and some of the other revelations came out. So now we don't have, as you said, we don't have public hearings, and we don't know. You know, it could be that the Mueller's investigation stops. There are no more indictments. It could be that Mueller keeps going. I guess the only hope that we have is that in the court proceedings, and they're going to be in federal court, so there won't be cameras. But in the court proceedings, we get some good reporting about what what the allegations are, and you know, that's our only hope. And unfortunately, the federal courts don't allow cameras in the courtroom, so you can't see the demeanor of the witnesses or you know, the back and forth between the attorneys and the witnesses. So it's, I think, you know, there ought to be a way that there should be a public, public hearings on this once Mueller's investigation is over.
Yeah, an issue of this magnitude needs to be out there. People need to be able to watch it and decide for themselves. And I think that goes toward eliminating an awful lot of this back and forth. One side says the other side's lying. Yeah, you really, that gets diminished a lot when everybody's seen the same thing and everybody kind of has a shared base of facts on which to judge what's going on, what's happened.
Yeah, I agree. It's a problem, and the only hope is a trial, and there may be some trials in state courts, especially the New York Attorney General has apparently is tracking Mueller's investigation and is bringing charges or planning to bring charges against some of the people that are revealed in the Mueller investigation. So in state court in New York, they do have cameras, and that'll be one of the places where we get to see the witnesses on the stand.
Yeah, even, you know, he mentioned at the end of that interview, too, that intelligence had been falsified for the Iraq war, which I thought was an interesting remark. Even this same question, I think, can go to a much larger environment, that maybe we should have had public hearings and brought the intelligence out for, you know, prior to the Iraq war. I mean, there's got to be a framework where you can protect sources and methods, but still be able to get what vital intelligence is out there and have it challenged in public by members of Congress who are hearing from their constituents.
You know, my memory's hazy on this, and I got to look it up. This is one of those cases where I need to look up Google. But didn't England look into the lead up to the Iraq War and the Downing Street memo and have public hearings on that topic? I'm pretty sure they did.
Yeah.
So maybe we could follow England's model. I'll have to look that up. I'm not quite sure, but there was some report based on the Downing Street memo. All right, Dave.
Well, maybe you can get him back and ask him those questions. I'd love to hear somebody who's been in the intelligence community talk about that.
Okay. All right.
Thanks.
All right, Dave. Thanks a lot. There's other good people, too, that we could call. Let's go to Sam, who's in Seminole. Hey, Sam, you're on MNF. What would you like to comment about?
Hi, Rob. I just wanted to first thank you for your previous guest, Mr. Goodman. I found him to be very enlightening and informative. But Rob, I just wanted to quickly say that I just give kudos to the students and just kind of showing politicians who have seemed to kind of lost their way of what they're going to present when they finally become involved in the political process. I think it's going to be a big turnaround for the United States. And also, I just wanted to say, I'm just kind of curious, Rob, with the things that President Trump and the Republicans and in some cases the Democrats, some of the things that they're driving toward, like maybe nuclear war or just this disenfranchisement of the press in the United States. I'm just kind of curious, is somebody or is some entities driving Trump to do these things? Because I couldn't imagine him doing them just on his own, particularly with the rest of the Republican Party supporting him. And that's all I got to say.
All right, Sam, thanks a lot. Thanks. That's a topic that we're going to do later on this week. We're going to get close to that topic later on this week when we talk to an author about the future of the U.S. So, Sam, thanks. Thanks for raising that. Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Ernie writes this from Port Richey. He said, remember when General Wesley Clark stated that he had been shown the countries that the U.S. intended to invade? Not only Iraq, Libya, and Syria, Iran was on that list, writes Ernie. I think I remember that. Yeah, you're right, Ernie. Thanks a lot. And Anonymous writes, is there a way for the public to support the March 24th march? Well, I think there's a variety of ways. One is to go to the march. There will be local marches. I think the march in Tampa is slated as my friends from high school who were on here earlier this week, they said the march in Tampa is going to be at Curtis Hickson Park. It's going to be a big march in Washington, D.C. I'm sure if you listen to MNF a lot between now and March 24th, we're going to have a lot of information about the marches on the air. So I'm sure this show and other shows are going to be providing some information. If you want to comment about anything you've heard, we can talk about Seth Rich. We can talk about the vote yesterday in Pennsylvania. We can talk about whether or not the U.S. is on the brink of war in Iran after the shakeup in the president's secretary of state position. We can talk about the march against gun violence, one of which is taking place this afternoon in Ybor City at 4 o'clock, or whatever else is on your mind when it comes to news. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Gary in Dunedin. Hi, Gary. You're on MNF. Oh.
Yeah, thanks for the great guest, as always. You know, the bigger picture, I believe, in many of our discussions about supporting Trump and guns and our wars, our torture programs, it always puzzles me. I mean, where are morals and ethics, compassion, empathy, the golden rule in our national political character? I don't see how Americans can continue. How could any American back anybody that volunteered to run a torture black site or was assigned to run it and then didn't resign their commission in the CIA? I mean, if our tax dollars pay torturers, war criminals, I mean, you know, that indicates a lack of national moral character. And I would believe that, as with the Roman Empire and other things, the chickens will come home to roost. I mean, if we use violence and horrible treatment of other humans as a matter of national policy, that's ghoulish, that's macabre, that's sickening. And it seems like that the Democrats and anyone else who's good in Congress should just say no to Pompeo and Haspel and say, we don't want torturers in our government, period.
Yeah, you know, we've never really had a national conversation about the outcome of the Iraq war. President Trump mentioned it a few times. I think Bernie Sanders mentioned it a few times during the campaign, but we have not really had a commission that says, where did we go wrong? How many countries did it destabilize? How many refugees did it send to other parts of the world? And how can we prevent this from ever happening again? We've never had that conversation here in the U.S., and we need to.
Yeah. It reminds me of the Sam Harris podcast, where he often has ethicists on, and they talk about how Americans have these compartments in their mind. Good terrorism is when we do it. Bad terrorism is when they do it. Collateral damage is when we kill hundreds of thousands of civilians. Terrorist victims are when they kill our civilians. It's really a moral issue, and our country doesn't have a truth commission. You're exactly right.
All right, Gary, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Ron.
Thanks for your phone call. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Laura in St. Pete Beach. Hi, Laura. You're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. I just wanted to follow up. Someone was asking about the marches on March 24th.
Mm-hmm.
There is also one in St. Petersburg at 10 a.m. on March 24th. And if they want to get the information, they can Google March for Our Lives.
Okay, and I forgot to mention, I think there's also one in Sarasota, too. So, Laura, are you involved in setting up the march in St. Pete?
No, I'm not, but I am a member of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense.
Okay, and do you know where's the march going to be in St. Pete?
I believe it's meeting at the courthouse, but I don't know exactly. If they can Google March for Our Lives, they'll find out.
They'll find out everything. All right.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for giving us a heads up.
Thank you.
All right. Great to hear from you, Laura. Thank you. 813-239-9663. I want to just throw in one more thing into the possible mix here as we have this conversation. The World Happiness Report came out today, ranking 156 countries on factors such as health, life expectancy, social support, and low corruption. The number one country in the world, according to the World Happiness Report, is Finland. Norway came in second. The rest of the top 10, Denmark, Iceland, Switzerland, Netherlands, Canada, New Zealand, Sweden, and Australia. The U.S. fell to 18th place from 14th last year. Now, Finland, which is number one, is relatively homogenous. It has 5.5 million people. It has 300,000 foreigners or residents with foreign roots. The largest immigrant communities in Finland are from other European nations, Afghanistan, China, Iraq, and Somalia. So I wonder what the gun laws are in those 10 countries, the happiest countries on the planet. I wonder what the healthcare laws are in the happiest countries on the planet. I wonder what the wages are in the happiest countries on the planet. I think you know the answer to all that. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Jim, who's in Bradenton. Hi, Jim, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yeah, during the campaign, President Trump criticized President Bush's decision to invade Iraq and, you know, called it a doozy of a mistake, and generally talked about the dangers of military intervention in foreign affairs. And I think a lot of Americans agree with that. And now he's assembling a war cabinet with Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State. The ex-head of the head of the CIA is going to be our chief diplomat. And, the woman who wants to head the CIA, oversaw a torture program at a black site in Thailand. She's going to be the head of the CIA. Who's next? John Bolton as National Security Advisor?
And he is talking about Bolton, who's one of the hardest right-wing militarists in Washington.
This is all very dangerous. I think the anti-war movement needs to assemble and push back against all this, because this president appears to be headed for war. And we gotta stop this. We gotta stand up. All the people who protested Vietnam in the 60s, all the young people, we need to get together and stop this program to go to war with North Korea or Iran. And it because it's very real.
All right, Jim. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. You can call us up at that number. Here it is again, 813-239-9663. And you can send your email into the studio here. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. This is listener-supported radio, WMNF in Tampa. And let's go to Tina, who's in Tampa. Hi, Tina, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi, I just want to say that I agree with what I hear most people saying when they're calling and they're shocked and dismayed that, you know, these are his choices. These are the president's choices for some of the most important positions in our country. But why are they shocked? Because, you know, listen to what he's, you know, remember what President Trump said when he was campaigning? I mean, he said, let's bring back waterboarding. And yet, people still voted for him. He said, let's bring it back, something that everyone agreed upon, and including those in this country. Even the Republicans agreed in the final analysis that it was torture, it was a black chapter in our history, we never want to go there again, and look, who is now the head of the CIA? Why are people so shocked? You know, it amazed me that they'd say, oh my goodness. Look,
but that last, Tina, the last caller had a good point. The president said that the U.S., President Trump during the campaign said that the invasion of Iraq was a bad thing to do. He said it was a huge mistake. We wasted billions and trillions of dollars. It's not the position he had in 2000.
The invasion of Iraq.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's not the position he had in 2003, but, you know, I think the president was, and I think you're right, I think he supported torture. I think he wanted to keep Guantanamo open. I think that's exactly right. But also, on the other side, he was trying to play to some of those people that don't like war and thought that the Iraq invasion was a huge mistake. So I think he was trying to play to both sides on that, don't you?
Right, right. Yeah. And that's what he does. I don't think that this president really gives much deep thought to anything he does. I think he just wants to go to rallies and talk tough and see people cheering or waving signs with his name on it. And then he wants to, when he wants to act presidential, he can try to do some of that. I think that, you know, in the end result is this country spins out of control without any serious leadership, because What are the leaders in Congress doing? Nothing. All the more important that people vote and vote during the midterms. At least try to get a majority of Democrats to counterbalance this. And I hope that these people do not get confirmed. That's all I got to say.
All right. Well, Tina, thanks a lot. Thank you. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Terry in Clearwater. Hi, Terry. You're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
I just want to say that all this business with the war and Trump, everybody knew this, but they still voted for this idiot. He's been a lying blowhard since he started his so-called business career, which he's never been a successful businessman. He's a successful acquisitor. He's good at acquiring stuff and miserable at running it. That's his track record. And as far as the war goes, buddy, we're in a new era now. When they ended the draft, they created a professional army, which sadly, with minimum wage as low as it is, a lot of people's only way out of poverty is to join the army. And if it's a volunteer army, I'm going to keep my mouth shut and my head down. If
yeah,
it's a draft and I don't want to be there, I'm writing down every damn thing I don't like that I see.
Yeah, the demonstrations were much huger when the draft was in force.
We took all the democracy out of our army the minute we stopped the draft, because now you only got people that want to be there.
All right, Terry, thanks. Thanks for making your points.
All righty. You take care and have a happy day.
Okay, you too.
And God help us all.
Well, I hope it doesn't get that dire. I mean, I think it will get dire if people remain silent. And if they don't contact their members of Congress, as Tina said, if you don't vote, if you just sit on the sidelines, if you don't vote for your interests, what you really care about, if the politicians think that they can ignore you because you're staying home, or they don't hear from you as you don't call their district offices, things will get worse and worse. But I think if people speak out, using facts and using a calm, reasoned argument, I think we have a good chance of winning and not going in the wrong direction. Hey, Jeff Haynes was our phone producer today, and I'm Rob Lurie. Thanks for listening. This is WMNF in Tampa. If you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and we'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock when we do another round of this. And tomorrow I've got a really great guest, so be sure to be here at 11 o'clock. This is WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg.